You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to the Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. With college and university back in session, today we're going to chat with the Futures team at the Royal Society for Blind Children. Now, Mark Wright is their Futures coordinator, and he's joining us to share his best advice for young blind and partially sighted students starting this new chapter in their lives. It is lovely speaking with you, Mark.
It's a pleasure. I'm very pleased to be here, Pauline.
Well, Mark, I would like to start with the Futures team. Can you tell us what is the team's role?
Futures, I guess, is the best catch-all term for what we do. Every young person has a future, and what we enable young people who take part in the service to do is to really narrow down, explore, and decide what their future might be like. Really, there are multiple points of entry into the program for young people, and they're usually correlating to the key transition points in an education journey. The earliest stage in which we might start working with a young person will be around 13, when they're choosing GCSE options, where they're having to make informed decisions about what they want to do and what the best options are to help them secure that for the future. Then at post 16, post 18, and so on, we support with those transitions into further or higher education, apprenticeships, internships, into fully paid employment or into work experience or volunteering. For those young people, particularly who are going into HE, which I know is one of the main focal points today, is to support them through their university journey in terms of making sure that the appropriate adjustments and support are in place for them. And sometimes that means communicating as well with the student disability teams on campus, but also supporting them through that journey so that when they come to the end of their undergraduate study, there's a destination for them post-education. Yeah, we work with them to secure post-grad employment, to secure access to grad schemes and so on. So each individual young person is the driver. How fast, how slow we go, what we concentrate on, what we do, how much we engage at any given time, it's really within their control. And I guess our job is to give them the security in a safe space where they can enact that.
I love that you're very much a personalized guiding hand in this case. And a lovely transition into our topic today. So, Mark, for those young people going to college or university for the first time, it obviously can be very nerve-wracking. You're dealing with a new environment, new friends, new teachers. So when things go wrong, it can be really difficult to advocate for your own needs. So what would be your best advice for a student who perhaps finds themselves facing this challenge?
One of the key things, and it's something I try and encourage each new intake to start doing even before Freshers Week, when they're actually starting on campus, is to engage with the student support infrastructure that's in place within the uni already, you know, whether that's with the student union, whether it's with the student disability team or whatever their individual title is. I know sometimes they shift from uni to uni. Sometimes it's disability and dyslexia or disability and neurodivergence. But to start having a conversation with those people, so your name registers with them, first of all. You've made connections. It's really about starting to build a sense of community. I mean, for anyone from any starting point, that transition to uni and into a completely unfamiliar social setting, as well as an academic one, is scary and intimidating. And particularly if there are factors that really impact on that massively around accessibility and so on, and around simply having the kind of resource and support in place that help you to function. Yeah, don't be afraid of having conversations. Get involved, as I said, with those communities and infrastructure that's already there. And I think also one of the things that we're able to do for people who are in that kind of pre-university stage is to connect them with vision impaired peers within our cohort. They may not all be studying the same subject or going to the same uni, but clearly there are points of connection that they have. So we kind of help build an informal community in what we do, so people can recognize those points of commonality, share their own solutions and concerns around them, and start to build, as I said, that sense of informal community that can support.
Now, Mark, I feel like sometimes it's worth to maybe lay out the rights you might have if you're someone who has a disability, you're blind, or maybe you're partially sighted. What rights is it worth remembering when you are stressed, when you're advocating for yourself, and to support you in thinking that, yes, I am definitely legally supported in this concern. I definitely can advocate myself on this topic.
Your key right is to have the appropriate adjustments and resources in place to enable you to conduct your study and also your student life. So that's ensuring that you have the right technology or equipment in place, to ensure that you have non-medical personal support, to ensure that accommodations are made not just within the physical space within the university, for instance, where you might be placed within a lecture space, what lighting might be like, what accessibility to a whiteboard might be, and so on, but also in terms of the shape and structure of the course. So your entitlement to reasonable adjustments around submission dates or extra time for assignments, for access to written materials in advance in a digital or other accessible format. So those really are key things that I guess underpin the sort of everyday processes around university. And sometimes those are the things where, yeah, there is often a slippage, or where things aren't necessarily in place in those first critical few weeks and months.
And obviously it can maybe take a little bit more time, especially if you're, in many cases, if you're taking a lot of subjects, often those adjustments have to be made specifically for different assignments, different teachers. So you're navigating a lot of conversations there with multiple people.
Exactly. Which often is difficult, considering the way that sometimes conversations don't link up or intersect, or looking at the fragmented way in which these systems sometimes work. You know, just thinking about the way DSA works, your disabled student allowance. For people going to university, you know, you're making your claim online, you'll then have a needs assessment done with a report produced, but then it's incumbent on the university to enact that. But it's also incumbent on you sometimes to source personal support from that. I was speaking recently to a young person we've been working with for over a year or so, who's starting a degree in Japanese studies in a few weeks' time. And one of their requirements is for a Japanese speaking note taker. It's a fairly niche request. Everything else that's necessary in terms of hardware and software, we've got in place, no problem. But that's been a difficult thing to navigate. So again, in his instance, it's been kind of thinking laterally around the kind of contacts and infrastructure that he's had around that. The agencies recommended have been unable to provide someone for them. So we've explored Japanese cultural institutes around London, where he's going to be studying. We've contacted postgraduate students within his university to see if there's someone there who would be familiar with the subject, who may be able to support. So again, it's thinking kind of laterally about how to solve those problems and kind of advocate from that perspective.
So your team, you work alongside the student and the uni, I guess, trying to work together more than against each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, with that sort of sometimes that fragmentation or disorientation where the parts don't all fit together neatly like a jigsaw, I guess our role is to act as a sort of coordinator or link person, if you will, to enable a conversation between all those parties. Again, another example, a student who had embarked on a fashion course and found on their induction day that the learning support assistant that they'd been assigned wasn't available, and there was a completely new person who we now had to kind of build a relationship with, whereas we'd spent several weeks building that previously. Again, if you can imagine being in that situation, that's pretty stressful when you're dependent on that person to really help you manage your day, never mind to succeed academically. So again, we're there to, if you like, step into the breach or to go as far or as deeply into the conversation as the student, the young person might want us to, again, to act as a kind of mediator, negotiator with all parties to make sure that we get an agreement that ultimately works for everyone, but primarily always works for the student or the young person in question.
Mark, what would be your biggest tip when it comes to building confidence for someone who's speaking up for themselves for the first time in this sort of environment?
That's a really good question. I think the biggest thing that you touched on earlier, Paulina, is to know your rights, to be clear about what your entitlements are, and to always root your self-advocacy within that knowledge that these are not kind of gifts that are bestowed on you. They're not special luxuries or privileges. They're absolutely your central entitlements. They're, if you like, the guarantee of your freedom and liberty as a student. So always really fully understand the material and legal rights that you have as a student, and always base your arguments in that. It can be easy and entirely understandable to become emotional and anxious in that process. But if we ground everything in that shared knowledge and that shared reality, it's the strongest position to argue from.
Let's be honest, the more you do it, the more you self-advocate, the easier it gets.
Exactly. Exactly. And on that subject, in the new year, we're running a bunch of workshops around developing self-advocacy skills as well, just to ensure that the young people we work with are best equipped in that respect. But yeah, as you say, it's almost an experimental process. And yeah, part of that is, I guess, building the resilience to and the confidence to allow yourself to not fail necessarily, that's too negative a term, but to not always achieve everything that you wanted, but to be able to then reflect on that situation. So, okay, I can learn this from this experience, or I can adapt to that. Again, the young person who I mentioned there, who needed the Japanese note taker, thinking laterally about how to solve a problem if the preferred solution isn't really a viable one.
Well, you touched upon your workshops coming up in the new year, but I would love to actually maybe get some advice for students that are maybe looking at venturing onto this journey into university and college next year. What steps would do you think they should take upon themselves now as they prepare for this big change in their lives?
I think at this point, if you're looking to start a degree next autumn, now is the point where you really need to be thinking about, okay, what are the best unis for my subject? And not just the best in terms of where they might rank in the many different league tables in terms of academic prowess, but also considering job prospects. Also considering, of course, how well they figure in terms of inclusivity, in terms of providing support and reasonable adjustments and so on. And again, that can become a real minefield of information to try and navigate and source and correlate everything, and not everything is always in the most accessible format. But I think that's really a key starting point. What I would also be insisting, gently insisting, I might say, that you start to do is familiarize yourself with how the process is going to work. The people who we've worked with who are going to be starting at uni, and we started the journey with them pretty much as soon as they'd finished at college last year, sort of July, August. And where that journey started with us and with them is to walk through every step of the process, from identifying a uni, from looking at how the UCAS application breaks down, looking at the information you need to get together for that, looking at how that needs to be presented and formatted, writing a draft personal statement that needs to go onto your UCAS application. As much of a pain as that can sometimes be, it's a really important part of the process. And then getting to understand the details and the nooks and crannies of student finance and DSA. We're doing that in an informed way, and we know exactly what's coming next. Again, if it throws us a curveball, as it sometimes will, at least we understand what should happen. We can deal with that. In November, we're running a couple of online workshops about precisely that process, and we're going to be spending the end of this year and the first quarter of next year on a monthly basis, taking people through each stage of the journey. So if they've done their homework, so to speak, and done the preparation at this point, then we can work to support them through the detail of each phase, from the UCAS statement through student finance application through DSA to then the independent living skills and physical transition to university life.
Well, Mark, we covered so much ground today. So if someone's listening and they would love to get in touch with the Futures team, what's the easiest way to do that?
Simplest and most accessible thing I'd suggest, go via our website, rsbc.org.uk. There's a Get in Touch tab there with a simple online inquiry box. You just need to give us your contact details and what you're interested in. So just tick Futures. And we'll be back in touch with you within a day or two, and we can at least have that initial conversation, get you assigned to the right person, and get your journey started. And again, working flexibly around your other commitments and demands in a way that suits your journey best.
Well, Mark Wright, a Futures Coordinator with the Royal Society for Blind Children, thank you so much for chatting with us today on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Paulina.
For more interviews, features and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.